seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. If they are, show up. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Now then, Golf Weekly friends, we are busy today. There is much to discuss. Nathan Murphy here in Dublin. Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Here in Dublin?
Yes. Well, let's go to Orlando, Florida. Mike Davis of the USG. Oh, hi, Fionn. Orlando, hi, Florida, lads. No less. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. It's not nearly as glamorous as it will be. I sent you a picture of my studio setup. I'm sitting in my hotel. It's 8 o'clock. I'm in my underwear, and I have my phone propped up against like 8 different things to so wow. I can see you lads. Yep.
Danger.
The glamour of life on the road.
Aching for the phone to slip and us to get
danger
a shot
here.
Of what underwear you are wearing. So we look forward to that. Come here. Can I start with a lovely thing Fionn Davenport did? This is the mark of the man. Did you see this on Instagram?
Oh, wonderful.
Fionn is a genuinely a wonderful person. Very friendly, very giving, very generous. He is a fantastic...
It is sick in you.
You were a fantastic human being, genuinely. And Fionn's mother was over in New York. Fionn obviously working in Orlando, Florida. And he arranged for friends to bring his mother out for dinner, or maybe she was having dinner either way. But Fionn got in touch and said, I'm going to show up and surprise her. Even arranged for her to be facing away from the door. Videoed the kind of whole thing on Instagram. I mean, ordinarily I'd question that, but actually, it worked. It was a great moment to have on video. And, commentary walked in, tapped her on the shoulder. I'm Fionn, I'll be your server for this evening. And she
bit of comedy.
Her, bit of comedy. Nice touch. They don't heighten the emotions too much. Bit of fun. Obviously, her reaction was as any mother's reaction would be when your son has turned up unexpectedly for dinner in New York. And I just thought to myself,
what a guy.
What a guy, indeed. Well, that was fantastic. Yeah. Well done.
Oh, thanks, lads. It was, and it's funny. I was questioning whether to post it on Instagram as well because of that whole, oh, look at me, look at my virtue signaling. And rather than just keep it a moment between my mum and I and then share it with my immediate family or my friends.
Kevin Kilbane has the same predicament right now.
The steakhouse took good care of him anyway. But it was lovely. And it's worth pointing out that I don't see my mum that often because she lives in Italy and I live in the UK. So she... And as you know, she'd spent all this time planning this trip to New York and she was on her own and she was happy enough to be on her own. But like, I kind of thinking, she's 80 years old and I just thought it'd be a nice thing to do. And it would also get me a chance to fly up to New York. So I got in like at 1 o'clock. I got back to Orlando at 1 o'clock last night. And I must say, I'm still kind of on a high from it. It was lovely to see her. And we had a lovely day then yesterday, kind of just wandering around and we did the High Line and the vessel at Hudson Yards and went for food. It was great. It was brilliant.
Your mommy is the most Italian-looking mammy I've ever seen in my life.
She really is, isn't she?
That's exactly what I would expect.
I know. I thought she was going to turn around and be like, ciao bella, hey!
No, but she did. Did you not? She goes, no, no! Like this. It was like, yeah, it was. And she, yeah, it was, I have to say, it was, so late last night when I was at the airport, she sent me a text and, she told me that, the last day was like the best day she's had. And I was like, well, okay, let's not go mad. But it was, it was lovely. Thank you. I was happy to do it. Although my brother and sister on our family WhatsApp were not happy. Mm. Not happy at all.
Thanks for showing up.
Fair enough.
Showing us up again, Fionn.
Exactly.
Thanks for that.
Exactly.
We get it. You're the best son. We get it. It's very easy not to do those things. Mm. So I think it's only when you do them, you realize, God. Well, life is long, but it's obviously incredibly short in terms of your opportunities to make those gestures. You don't get many opportunities, so you got to do it when you can.
Well, I think you're... my dad died 18 months ago. My mom is 80. And, you're here... it's like, absolutely, do them because, it's just... Anyway, there you go.
Yeah, no, good man.
So you're in Florida for a month?
Yes.
Are you playing golf?
I know. I will do. I haven't had any... I went on... For anybody who's a fan of theme parks...
So I want to ask you about this. So this was also on your Instagram. So you were at a Star Wars theme
park
ride?
No, yeah. So at Hollywood's, Disney's Hollywood Studios, in December, they opened Rise of the Resistance, which is the new ride as in the Galaxy's Edge themed land, which is, since the opening of Harry Potter, whatever it was, 10 years ago, Universal, this is the big deal. Like, it's hard to fathom, even for me. Orlando gets 75 million people a year come here. Wow. And the vast majority of them come from the theme parks. This is the theme park capital of the world. You know, whatever you think of theme parks, they're incredibly popular. Anyway, but Rise of the Resistance, which is this 20-minute ride, which is inordinately long for average rides, the maddest thing is trying to get on it. It's insane. It's like 100,000 people all trying to fit into like a tiny restaurant. It's mental. Like you normally they do it, they have this thing called virtual queuing where you go on the app and you press to get onto a boarding group, so they give you a time slot at which you will get on. But all those time slots are gone by 7 a.m. Wow. And so in order to be in the park to click onto the app, you have to get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning. It's mental. Mm. There was 30,000 people, I count. Oh, well, I didn't count them, but I estimated 30,000 people in the dark sitting or standing inside the park gates with the app open at like 6:45, waiting for 7 o'clock to come and the app to open up. I mean, the ride is amazing. I eventually got on. It's absolutely brilliant. But like, holy moly, I couldn't get over the mentalness of it.
That is up there.
I had assumed that you being you were on very much a junket and you were there early to laugh at all these 30,000 people and walk straight to the top of the queue.
No. I'm here because I'm here working. I'm writing a Lonely Planet guide to Orlando. Absolutely. No. You're just a punter amongst punters. Like, that's just the way it goes. And so it was, I must say, it was like, I mean, I got a load of texts on Twitter, people asking me, oh, is it worth it? Well, I want to bring my 10-year-old. And, you know, look, this is like, as I said, this is one of the most popular places on earth to come for a family holiday. It's not cheap. And if you want to go on these kind of rides, you have to be willing to wait. You have to get up really, really early. And, oh, I mean, you know, after, like, is it worth the effort? I don't know. It's up to everybody to decide. I don't think I'd get up at 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning to do it again. Yeah. But if I could wander into the park, get onto a boarding group and get onto the ride, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
We can only avoid talking about golf for so long. Peter Laurie has joined us. Hello. Gentlemen. Sorry we had to start without you.
You missed all the good stuff.
Yeah. I believe you've spoken nothing about golf.
No. We the studio space today is crammed all the way, so we had to get going. But you've missed nothing of any great note. Some tweets thus far. Andrew Fitzgerald went to a golfing range in Arizona, not in Spawell. Don't hold it against him.
No.
And he said it was a pretty cool concept. Lots of targets around. All, you know, the Americans have a more fun.
This is the Top Golf, isn't it?
Top Golf, all that stuff. Yeah, yes. He was saying cool concept. JP, any chance you can recruit Andrew Cotter and Ian Carter to the pod? It would be great to see them take their talents to Golf Weekly after BBC cut. Hashtag the cut. Bad decision, BBC. We were fans of the cut for sure.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Typical BBC.
Oof. Well, they're chasing after the under 35s and Five Live in a very big way. So they just presume something like golf can't possibly appeal. Kieran Brannigan, do you think G-Mac will have a couple of cold beers tonight? Said Kieran and about 80 million other people to us.
I can't believe we're not getting Shane Hannan in for a live rendition. So if anybody hasn't seen this, we'll stick it up in the Golf Weekly account as well.
I might, I'll tag on the audio of this to the very end of the pod. It is
so as everybody knows, Graham McDowell once upon a time did a PGA Tour Cribs, which keeps getting taken down. Mm. No matter how many different people around the world, I don't know any of them, just to make that clear, I don't know any of them, but they keep putting it up and it keeps getting taken back down.
At whose request, I wonder?
I don't know, but Shane Hannan has taken it into his own hands and he has recreated, sort of Phoenix from the Flame style, Graham McDowell's Cribs, and it is sensational. His GMAT is word perfect.
Very good. Very, very good.
Have you seen this?
I'm 12.
No, I haven't.
What?
No.
Oh, we'll have to show you.
Have you seen the original Cribs, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm 12 miles away from Nona Blue here.
Have you been in?
No, not yet.
Well, would you mind bringing in the video and showing it to everyone at Nona Blue?
Oh my God!
Get it put up on the big screen.
Even sir, just take a picture of yourself.
Sir, you're gonna have to. Sir, you're gonna have to ask you to leave. Sir.
He's at Pebble Beach this week, so you're clear. You can go.
That's
Sean Haw, GMAC on fire. He'll definitely enjoy a couple of cold beers later on. Chris Kearns, hat tip to Peter Lorry for calling this. Jordan Spieth shot a 74, appears to be at a loss, was the article this person linked to. Yeah, good for you, Peter. I hope you're feeling good about
it. I'm not, but look, you know, that's the way it is.
Ian Kane, this always made, the thought of this I always enjoy, listening to the pod on the tube in London. That is all. I always like the thought of people on the tube listening to us. It feels very exotic to me. Brian Normal, not to you, you're probably there every
all
two or
the
three
time.
Weeks. Yeah, yeah, less exotic to you. Just listening to Golf Weekly OTB, fantastic news, Peter Lorry is back on the course. Says Brian, wishing you well.
Well done, Peter.
Well done, Peter.
Do you want to see the video? Great. Shane has the video. What are the chances? Shane producing just has the video at a drop of a hat.
Shane, your humility knows no bounds.
Are you sure, Shane? Are you sure? Anything else we ever ask for in this show, it's, you need 3 weeks' notice to get a video uploaded. Now it's, I just happen to have it right here.
The Tiger Woods crying. No, I don't have that.
Sorry. Do you want to watch it?
Yeah, go on, Shane. Okay. Stick it up there.
My favourite superhero would be Batman, of course. He's got all the toys, he's got all the cars, and gets the girls too. That was awesome. Superpower, I guess teleport session will be great. You know, we travel a lot on the golf tour. If I could get myself to Asia or Australia or somewhere in the world in an instant, I would save some time. Tattoos, no tattoos. Definitely not in the near future either. I'm not a tattoo kind of guy. My biggest fear, probably snakes, alligators, spiders. Yikes. Biggest weakness, probably a cold beer. I just can't resist them.
That was absolute. I've never seen that. Shane, well done.
Well done.
That's only the start. There's a full video in that coming later today.
Helpfully, of course, some people have tagged Graham McDowell straight away to let him know all about it.
So absolutely, yeah.
He will enjoy
that.
He's
a hard man to get, I believe.
Well, no. People have been screaming cold beer at him on course of late, so I think he's more than happy for this video to disappear. We have not exactly played our part here, but how and ever. So, a few things to discuss before, Nathan's going to have to run in about 10, so I want to get your thoughts on a few things. We should mention GMAC. Mm. I mean, this is quite the return to form for him. The Saudi Open, he took a one-shot lead into the final round. Watching the highlights, because I was busy over the weekend, but watched the highlights. The wind was up. These were tough conditions. He had Dustin Johnson chasing him. He had Phil Mickelson chasing him. This was, decent names right behind him. And he saw them off, 40 years of age. This lifts him from 104th in the world to 47th. He's suddenly in the top 50, Augusta on the horizon, Mexico WGC on the horizon. And you think a year ago he was 257th in the world. So he's moved up 210 places and he's looking at a first Masters appearance since 2016. This is a game changer for GMAC. An incredible win, Peter.
It certainly was.
Out of nowhere, really. To a point. He's been improving.
To a point, yeah. He's been improving as it went on. To be honest with you, did I think he had it in him again? I kind of probably would have been on the naysayer side. But it was really impressive. And it was really impressive the way he handled himself more than anything else. There's one thing about Graham McDowell is he knows how to win. Mm. Put him in a situation and he wins. Mm. He doesn't not fall over the line. He gets him. He's a winner. Mm. Simple as.
He is good in contention under pressure.
He doesn't have the prettiest game in the world. He doesn't, he doesn't do anything that's, you would say,
wow.
I want to sort of recreate that. But what he does have is he certainly has, as they would like to say it, bottle.
Mm. He made a point, Nathan, that a few players have made when they get to a certain age, even Tiger, I think. Mm. And he was saying he has kids now. They're getting to an age where they can understand the world. He doesn't want their understanding of his golf career to be via YouTube videos, is what he said. He wants them to see it in real time. Mm. So that's maybe a bit of motivation back for a guy who, by his own admission, had his priorities elsewhere for a while.
Yeah, there seemed to be two things going on with him. One was the priorities elsewhere, and there was a lot of business interest, and he got married, and he was having kids, and like we're very critical of our sports people of, well, why didn't you stay fully focused on the golf? What are you doing enjoying the other parts of your life? And he probably did that a little bit too much and took his eye off the ball. As see what I did there, Graeme? He did that once too.
But Paul Laurie was in a similar category. You know, his kids got to a certain age where it sort of kind of rejuvenated his game.
Right.
That was in the build-up to Medina then?
Yeah.
What age are your kids now?
They're well past that age. Yeah.
They've looked on YouTube and there's no going back.
They've looked at me and they say, Daddy, were you ever famous? And I went, no.
Just Google Daddy and Coke. Yeah.
The first headline
they see. it did, like last weekend did show what makes golf very different probably to every other sport. You have Graeme McDowell winning on the European Tour and Webb Simpson winning on the PGA Tour. Yeah. And you think back to 2012 US Open and it's the two of them going at it. Both of them had huge dips
in their careers.
In the careers since then, where you kind of wrote them off for different reasons. Like, you write Graeme McDowell off because it just feels as though the game has changed. And there was a 3-year spell where every interview with Graeme McDowell was, has the game passed you by? And he's trying not to get his head down. He's trying not to change his game. He's talking about Jim Furyk and what he did. And actually, maybe he has followed Furyk quite well, because Furyk obviously had this late flourish in his career as well, where maybe he came to an acceptance of, I can't out-bomb Dustin Johnson, but you know what? I want it more than Dustin Johnson. And it was a great pairing for him as well. Yeah. On Sunday with Dubuisson, in that
curious, wasn't it?
It brought back obviously all the Ryder Cup memories and the good memories there, but also you just knew Dubuisson wasn't going to beat McDowell
or intimidate him
no.
in any way.
Oh no, Victor is as mad as a hatter, so he's a
careful.
He's
now.
Typical, you know what I mean? Out there, he's typical.
Mad
French,
as a hatter, how?
He's
outgoing or is he shy?
He's probably more on the shy front of it, but he's just eccentric, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Is that a better word?
You see, I often, because we never got to the bottom, and I don't think anyone ever will get to the bottom of the Dubuisson thing, and we should legal it before we actually, in case you're about to tell us of the Dubuisson thing and the deep dark secrets of the past and
you guys in
all that sort of
get
thing.
Get over yourselves.
But anytime you hear, it's almost, not quite the Patrick Reed level, but anytime you hear eccentric, and it's a sports person, it's also, he's just not like everybody else.
Yeah.
He's a tiny bit different. Like, is this guy totally out there?
Totally.
Is he?
Yeah.
Like a standard small talk conversation with Victor would go along the lines of, hey Victor, how's things? He would say,
me no speak English.
Maybe he might give you a nod.
Okay.
At best.
At best, right. Yeah. So you mightn't engage?
No. Okay. Not at all.
Right, interesting.
You know.
Let's talk some more about Victor off air, and then we'll see what we can bring. Because we're very curious. Like, the Dubuisson thing was a real mystery around that time.
McGinley was rubbing his hands. Saw him all over the place at the weekend. Dubuisson and McDowell together. What does that remind everybody of?
Oh dear. Webb Simpson, you mentioned. A fifth at the Masters last year, by the way. Mm. That's worth bearing in mind.
Oh, Webb Simpson for the last couple of years has been right there.
He's on a current streak of 16 consecutive starts where he has finished in the top 30 all the time. He is number 7 in the world now. I don't think people would fully have suspected that. So he's back in the top 10, first time since 2012, when obviously he won the US Open. So Webb Simpson and Graeme McDowell, it was a throwback weekend, Fionn.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to say there was a point, and Peter, you remember a mutual friend of ours, Kieran McMonagall, who was an Irish pro a number of years ago. He, and I think he and Ramy Burns both told me this story that in the years, so the late 90s, and this is about Graeme McDowell, that winning mentality is that even though he didn't have the kind of the prettiest game, as you say, he would have everybody beaten just by sheer confidence in his own game. And I remember Kieran said that to me, and this would have been around, probably around the time when he played in the Walker Cup in 2001, that what made McDowell such a remarkable golfer was not so much that he was better at golf than everybody else. It was that his head was better than everybody. Like he would stand in a room with all these other aspiring Irish players and he was just better than all of them. And he would happily tell you as well. And that sense of confidence that you talked about, that like he really does know how to win. So he can go years and kind of tumbling down, distracted by other things. And when he is in contention, he goes, yep, no, I'm here. This is mine. I'm going to take this. So it was just interesting to see that, like, you think, oh, has McDowell disappeared for good? And he goes, I wonder, is that winning mentality doesn't ever really leave you, does it?
No, it doesn't. Not at all. I remember playing in Dubai, probably one of my last years, and they had this reunion of all the winners. And I got to play a 18 holes with Eamon Darcy. And, you know, Eamon is late, probably in his 60s now, whatever it may be. But I remember on the first tee, even in practice, it was like just as he approached the ball, it was like somebody flicked a switch.
Things got serious.
And things got serious, and it was that competitor that was in him that he wanted to continue, you know.
I think with all pro golfers, actually, we've been lucky enough to play with a few here and there. Mm-hmm. Michael Hoey, a casual day, you know, very, at the most casual points. When they step within a meter of the ball, the atmosphere changes. You can sense concentration levels go up to a very, very high level. It's a very interesting thing to be around. And it happens far more so with amateurs. When amateurs get into that space, well, there's almost a sense of dread in there. You know, like, it's a different
what's
thing.
What's going on? Yeah, what's going to go wrong?
But when you see it with a golfer, the atmosphere just cools a notch. There's like a tightening or something about them. It's kind of hard to verbalize, but I totally can understand what you're talking about with them.
It's nearly a sea, and people ask me, how did you know he's going to be a good player, or how can you pick it out? It's that little, those little things that are around the really, really good players. And they all have it, and they seem to be able to, turn it on and turn it off.
The distance in golf thing, obviously, is huge this week, so we'll get to that. But just to mention before we do, and time comes against us, Pebble Beach, it's the Pro-Am this week. Dustin Johnson is the favourite. Some choice celebrities. Tony Romo there, playing off a handicap of scratch. Kelly Slater, wonderful surfer that he was, playing off a handicap of 2. Chris O'Donnell, the actor, Batman and Robin. 7. Wayne Gretzky alongside Dustin Johnson, of course. Oof. Yeah, father-in-law.
I'd say that could have been awkward at times.
He's off 9, Wayne Gretzky. Josh Duvall, very handsome actor, also off 9. Ray Romano is 15. Condoleezza Rice there, off 15. And of course, DA points, Bill Murray back together. Is playing off 16.
I had a terrible fear, again, I seem to spend a lot of time on Instagram, it must be said. My entire life is built around, every conversation I now have is around something I've seen on Instagram, it seems. Conor Moore was obviously over there. Where else would he be? And I found myself looking through the list of celebrities going, dear God, if this man is playing in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, I'm giving up.
First name on the list, I'd say.
Not on the list. Ooh. Thank Christ.
But I saw him at the 7th.
Yeah, he was wandering around. So if you're listening, Conor, as happy as we are for your success, the second he's playing in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, it's done.
Yeah, you could.
You're
dead to us. Our relationship is over.
You're just getting a little bit too good.
Yeah, a bit too big time there.
Fair play to him, I say. Fair play to him.
No, begrudgery is the aim of the game.
That's a typical Irish thing, isn't it?
I think it's a human thing.
No, it's Irish.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Do you think all humans are doing a bit of a stock take and a bit jealous at times? No?
No.
It's okay to admit that. Go on, Fionn.
It's not exclusively Irish, but it is a particularly Irish thing.
What would you know in Florida with the sunshine? Go on.
Yeah. Americans, it is ultimately, in all I've noticed, it's one of the differences between Ireland and the US is that Americans almost, if you tell them, you share your success all the time. In fact, you show off.
Yeah.
It's Americans really kind of value, tell me everything great you've ever done. And it's like, if you met someone in Ireland and they started telling you all the great things, you're like, what is wrong with you?
That's okay. Yeah, okay.
Irish people tell them what's wrong with them, not what's right with them.
Well, it's on Bail Buck, isn't it? It's the poor mouth. It's all about, it's like, hide your successes.
I'm out of here.
You got to go.
I think I added a lot to this podcast.
Nathan.
It was good to have you.
Phenomenal, as ever.
By the way, cool haircut.
Thanks, Peter.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
Just to let you know that. Got the beard trimmed, the whole lot.
Got the beard trimmed. I took a massive risk. Your man has said it. That's what the little trimmy says.
Is your mic still on?
Is it? I turned it off, damn it. Hold on. Do you know how much all this costs?
Hang on.
Depending
haircut.
On...
Are you on?
How much all this costs?
Is he on, Emma?
No, we're still...
I'm back on.
You're back now.
Number one.
I would say, what age of a... Oh, no, yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Hmm? No, go on.
How much do you think a haircut and beard trim now costs?
Well, it depends where you got it.
25.
Sam's Barber.
Oh, I'd say 35.
30.
45 quid!
Oh.
And you know what really annoys me about it? All right, fair enough. It's expensive.
Yeah.
It takes forever.
Sorry, can I just make a great point? Don't go... I know you got to go. Right. So I had to get a haircut last week, the Virgin Media thing. Get a good haircut. Mm. these lads in the city centre now, taking an hour to cut your hair. I went to the Colester barber. He was sound, because it was, I moved into the area recently. He was like, we'll call it a tenner. It's usually €14, a tenner.
Tenner to you, Joe.
He had me done in 15 minutes, out the door. There are these lads in Dublin who think they are sculpting a piece of art and they're like spending 15 minutes on just like a tiny blade. It's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit. It's
bullshit.
I needed to be in here by midday. Yeah. I went in there at 10 to 11.
Oh, it's gone out of control.
And he's like, oh, sit back and relax. I'm like, well, I can't relax because I'm going to be 20 minutes late for work.
Yeah. I've stopped going to city centre barbers. They're taking so long.
But can I just say it looks well.
Thanks.
Okay. It does, but like...
But like, no better than paying 15 quid for it.
You could have done it in half the time.
It's the first time I've noticed it.
I shouldn't have named them now, I'm just thinking.
So there you go.
Before I decided to slate them.
Yeah. Murphy's
great cut. Great cut, though. I couldn't question the quality. It's just the length of time. I think they're trying to give an experience of... Yeah. You come in here, you spend your money. You can have coffee? A beer if you want. Yeah, do you want a coffee?
They might show you a few vouchers now.
I doubt it.
If there's a city centre barber out there who wants to, you know, advertise speed... Speed,
30 minutes.
20 minutes, done. 21 minutes, your business will take off. This is not, honestly, couldn't agree more.
The barber's there at Spa Wells, that's still open.
Yes.
I've gone in there once.
Yes, good lad.
Quick.
Yeah, Fran.
This business of 60, 70 euro haircuts.
Nightmare.
Nightmare, nonsense.
Yeah. On that note.
Fionn, do you have a cough there, do I hear?
I do, yeah. I've got one of those aircon calls. You know when you come and all of a sudden you're in air conditioning and the last few days I've just been...
Yeah. You've been to China recently. Why? Because.
It's against
all those things.
Because of the coronavirus.
Yeah, whatever. No. I don't know. I sent to some fellow on the range yesterday, and he's a good friend. And I said, I hope you didn't come back with that virus.
Well.
I made a joke to somebody in New York yesterday. I coughed. And I went, sorry, I've just come in from Wuhan. I'm a bit. It's just like.
I look at him. Obviously, it's dreadfully serious and like. People in their hundreds are dying, so it's awful.
500 so far, yeah. It's horrendous.
They're trying to quickly get the vaccine up to speed. Usually it can take 2 years. I think they're now, and again, the morals of this, hard to know, but like they're going to be testing on animals in the next 2 weeks to try and get this thing under control. So hopefully they do.
Sorry, have you seen the footage of building the hospital?
In a week?
Yeah.
That's right.
So when you're watching like the general election debates on RTE and Virgin and all these channels and they're, you know, talking about we need to get 1,000 beds, it'll take 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard not to look at that and look at
that. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Distance and golf. Okay. Don't bore the pants off everyone, but genuine news this week. A distance insights report, 100 pages of research. It's a joint RNA-USGA venture, 100 pages of research, as I said. We believe the continuing cycle of increases in distance is undesirable and detrimental to golf's long-term future, said the game. The report, since 2013, driving distances have increased at the rate of about 1 yard per year, the average of the top 20 increasing by 8 yards, and the average for all players on both tours increasing by 7 yards. Top women have shown a similar rate of increase. They're now averaging more than 250 yards on the LPGA Tour. So they haven't, I haven't read the report, so I could be wrong in this, but it doesn't seem like they've come up with a definite way to tackle this, but it seems equipment, and certainly they seem to have agreed they don't want this rate of increase to continue. Mm. They have left the door open for bifurcation of the rules, i.e. amateurs have a different set of rules to professionals. We might be playing with very different equipment to the professionals. This was always something they wanted to keep at bay, but it seems they're open to that now. And that's where we are. I think there's going to be some kind of consultation, discussion period. So anyone want to add anything to that? Have I left out any key details? Fiona, have you had a chance to look at it?
Yeah, I have looked at it.
I was hoping you had.
I had free Wi-Fi on the plane last night, so I was looking at the report. And, I mean, you summarised it quite well, but that debate is this. So the key thing is the golf ball. And on page 34, it says, and I'll just read you just this bit. The performance of golf balls has changed significantly over the last 25 years, with many of those changes contributing directly to hitting distance increases. And then this is the key quote. The most significant change in golf balls in this period has been the replacement of the wound core golf balls used since the early 1900s with the multi-layered solid core balls that are ubiquitous today. And he's saying typically multi-layer solid core balls spin considerably less than wound core balls at typical driver impact angles. And then there's this whole section a little later on, which I won't read because I struggle to understand it. The coefficient of restitution of the impact between the club and the ball, previously discussed in section 3211, is also dependent on ball material and construction. The summary is this, is that the ball is the difference, which Jack Nicklaus has been bleating on about for years. He says, but amateurs or players, non-elite players, the effect is greater for elite players because they hit the ball. Their impact on the ball is much better than non-elite players. Therefore, with that kind of, the solid core balls with lower spin, the way they hit the ball, it gets further distance, whereas you or I, Joe, won't get the same benefit.
Yeah, I was reading that. It accentuates the benefit of the lower spin rate when the ball is hit well. And as we all know from playing with ourselves and with amateurs, this slice is alive and well at amateur level.
But absolutely.
The pros get more distance, more bang for their buck from these balls.
And then, as you said, the interesting thing is, and the report, as far as I understood, it was not commissioned to say what should be done. Right. It was commissioned to say what the problem is or why. What is the truth about distance? And yes, of course, they talk about bigger driver heads and all the rest and all these new technologies. But ultimately, the main finger of blame is pointed at the golf ball. Mm. And as you said, they suggest the possibility of rule bifurcation. We will assess the potential use of a local rule option that would specify use of clubs and or balls intended to result in shorter hitting distances. The concept is that equipment meeting a particular set of reduced distance specifications, for example, a ball that doesn't travel as far or a club that will not hit his ball as far, might be a defined subset of the overall category of conforming equipment. Now,
sounds like a real page turner.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly dull, but this is the first time in, certainly in our lifetime, that it's hinted at a major, major change to the way golf is played. And so for that reason, that's why this report, though dry and utterly, you know, dull in reading, is so important. Now, it's only important in as much as the golfing authorities will take the suggestions or the findings under advisement and make changes to conform with them. Because otherwise it just sits in a shelf and just gathers dust. What was interesting is that Phil Mickelson, and the players have been asked, but Phil's was an interesting reaction. He's like, he goes, yeah, I don't think they're really giving enough credit to like the amount of effort that we pros have done in getting longer distance. And you're like, oh, poor baby. Is nobody saying you're a good boy, Phil? And it's like, of course that what the elite players think is important because ultimately the PGA is going to be guided by these guys to a certain extent. But like, he's missing the broader point, you know, he's missing the actual point of the report. And the point of the report is like, yes, because you have a lower spin rate, because you hit the ball so cleanly, but the technology is developed to accentuate that lower spin rate, and so therefore you can hit the ball more cleanly. You would not, if you went back to the old Balata balls or whatever, you wouldn't hit the ball nearly as far.
It must be said, Phil obviously has an agenda here, and he didn't even hide it because his opening answer was, I struggle with some of our governing bodies. He's talking about you, Mike Davis. I struggle with it because we're the only professional sport in the world governed by a group of amateurs. And that leads to some questionable directions. So, you know, that's kind of his shtick as well. Peter Lawrie, formerly a member of the Players Committee on the European Tour.
Okay.
Put yourself in that room. This report lands. All you guys like hitting the ball a long way. Although some of you are thinking, maybe distance has become too big a thing. How will the players react to this? What will they push for?
To be honest with you, and being sort of a bit cynical, I would have to say this report will be buried.
Buried?
Absolutely. Buried.
By the players?
By the players, by the tours, by the manufacturers.
Okay.
The manufacturers are the big key here. They're the big drivers. And they're the guys who are putting all the money into it.
Really? So they're just, but how can they, can't just bury it, can they?
Well, a friend of mine made a very good point to me. Just coming out the door, we were talking about when the grooves were changed.
Yeah. Affected Harrington in a big way.
And they went from square grooves to V grooves.
Yeah.
And Ping was one of the first originally. Remember the Ping sand wedges? And they were the ones that were banned initially because of the square grooves. And the Ping owner, Solheim, isn't it?
I'll double check. You keep going.
Yeah. Had a serious problem with this and went off and threatened to sue the tour. Now, I just want to be 100% correct on this.
Carsten Solheim.
Carsten Solheim, yeah. So, anyway, the threat of legal action was buried.
Nice.
And funny enough, we have the Solheim Cup straight afterwards. So, I'm trying to put two and two together, and what might happen in this kind of with this report here is the manufacturers won't want the pros to play with different golf balls than the amateurs because it's the pros who sell their golf balls pretty much. It's like the Titleist Pro V1, it's like your TaylorMade ball, it's like your Bridgestone ball that Tiger plays with, and it just, you know, Callaway the same thing. If we go to a conforming ball that doesn't fly as far, then their sales are going to be seriously hit. It makes sense to me as a player, ex-player, or whatever you want to call me, that we should all be playing with equipment that goes this, you know, a conforming distance. And I think the ball, without a shadow of a doubt, I don't think we needed this report to tell us what we already knew was the ball is the problem, and it's about time somebody made the decision in changing the rules and regulations that we all play with a shortened golf ball.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's my viewpoint of it. But will that happen? No chance.
Oh, you're that no chance on it. Yeah. Sorry, Fionn.
But I think Peter's absolutely right, but it is worth reading out the end line summary. So in summary, we believe that golf will best thrive over the next decades and beyond if this continuing cycle of ever-increasing hidden distances and golf course lengths is brought to an end. Longer, and then this is the key line, longer distances, longer courses, playing from longer tees and longer times to play are taking golf in the wrong direction and are not necessary to make golf challenging, enjoyable, or sustainable in the future. And just as money talks and bullshit walks, so Peter is absolutely correct in that the manufacturers are going to be, you know, hugely influential in what will happen with this report. But equally, golf itself is diminishing in popularity. And I wonder if there is like a Venn diagram where you have like the needs and wants of the manufacturers and then TV audiences, players picking up the game, membership at golf clubs, et cetera, et cetera. And somehow in that kind of happy middle, in that center circle, is the solution. Now, I agree with Peter. I think we're still miles and miles away from sorting it out. But I mean, maybe I'm just naive and maybe I'm just overly optimistic. But I think this report is a bold, bold step rather than just a dry kind of like, oh, you know, blah, 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 the ball, and let's park it and do nothing about it.
The way a government commissions a redundant report.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It says, yes, we're right on it. And meanwhile, everybody goes back to exactly what they were doing.
If the ball does change, architecture of golf courses will change. Mm.
Interesting, by the way, Brandel Chamblee was talking on the Golf Channel.
Quote him,
And he was quite strongly of the opinion, like, let's not rush into anything just yet. And his big issue was, well, look, and the report acknowledges through mention of bifurcation, the amateur is now repairing the course. He says, the real problem with the game, the reason the game is out of whack, is less distance and more that you can drive with zero accuracy, particularly on the PGA Tour, and you're not punished whatsoever. That you can just hit the rough every time. Mark Leishman, a couple of weeks ago, three fairways and one at Torrey Pines, and he was saying, we need to bring back rough and penalties. And he said people will quote from the key book in golfing architecture. Is Alistair McKenzie wrote it. And the line in that he says, golf architect's quote is, you know, the less rough, the more enjoyable the game. And Chamonix's argument was, well, at amateur level, fine. Let's make the game very enjoyable. But he said, the professional ranks, that is about competition. So we need to bring back punitive golfing architecture, which has just kind of gone by the wayside, and all the big hitters can hit with impunity. And they said that's the reason the game is out of whack. Now, there's still no doubt that when Jack Nicklaus was hitting a 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 iron, the lads now are hitting a 9 iron. So things have changed at the same time. But he's not so sure we need to rush into this. It was kind of an interesting point.
But if you change the structure of the golf courses and make the rough, you know, really heavy, it takes so much longer to play golf then. Because of the A, the distance of the golf, and then B, the punishment factor. And then your viewership on TV is going to be way down because it's going to be as boring as hell.
Rich Lerner said to him, but it's about entertainment too.
There's a lot that's going to have to happen, and you know, we keep on blaming golf in general for the problem of golf's problem is golf. However, when I look at it and when I watch, you know, on the TV, I really do think they need to make a better job of that part of it. They need to show more golf shots within that time, rather than, you know, like, it's like, you know, nearly watching paint dry.
Oh, the TV coverage is horrifically bad.
That's one of the major, like, if I was leading the European Tour right now, Keith Pelly, that's one thing that I would, you know, he owns, the European Tour own half of the European Tour productions, which they send out all the information and all the coverage to the different channels, and that's what they take up.
Yeah. You get a glimpse during majors of how good golf coverage can be.
Exactly.
When they show all the shots and shot tracer and, ooh, it's great. But even you watch European Tour events now, and the gaps between shots are just interminable at times.
It's horrendous.
It is. That is a bigger issue for in terms of attracting an audience. Our time is coming to a close. By the way, I think what we'll do is Paul Kimmage is embarking on a 3-part odyssey with Rory McIlroy, and part one was out last weekend. A few nuggets in there. Let's chat Rory and what we take from Rory in 2 weeks' time, I guess, when it's all done. Might be an interesting way of doing it. Who is going to go back to world number one, I think, very shortly, is the other news.
Yep.
Rory?
He's gone back to world number one, hasn't he?
Gone? Or is it after this week? Is he gone back?
Yeah.
Is he? Okay, I thought it was this weekend. Either way.
Sorry, maybe this weekend, but he's going to go back as to world number one.
Fionn, we'll let you go. It's what time? 8:45, I presume, in Orlando, Florida?
Good man. In Orlando. I'm going to have a cool beer.
What is the actual plan?
The plan is I am meeting the marketing manager of Visit Orlando for lunch, and
good friend.
And then I'm going to wander around downtown and get a sense of it. Downtown Orlando.
No golf over there, Fionn? No.
I will play. I just don't have the time at the moment, and I'm, as you can tell from my chesty voice, I'm not feeling great. So once I get over this and I kind of settle in, I'll play some golf.
Fionn got a haircut.
I want to play Bay Hill, but you know that Bay Hill is a private bloody members course. Okay. And the only way you can play is if you're staying on the course. So maybe the marketing manager of Visit Orlando might be able to make a couple of calls for me.
You must know someone at Bay Hill.
I've played there a few times, all right.
I'm going to pull a string for our friend here.
Is it worth it, Peter?
Oh, it's fantastic, of course. Absolutely fantastic. The memories, I played in the first ever Palmer Cup there, which was the universities against GB&I universities against America universities. So it was the first time I ever met Tiger Woods Bay Hill.
Yeah. What do you want to get? He remembers it well.
Exactly. I remember it well. He certainly wouldn't think about it, but I played against Nota Begay, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Did you beat him?
Half match.
Yeah, right.
Three up with three.
Was Nota Begay any good, Peter? Was he a good player?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, very good. Yeah. Right. Fortunately, I could putt then, and he didn't have a chance. There you go.
Just letting that linger a moment.
Oh, thanks.
Right, Fionn Danport, have a good day. Thank you.
Thanks, lads.
Cheers, Fionn.
All right.
Peter Lorry of Spawell Driving Range. Get there, get practicing. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Joe.
You're back at the office now, are you?
Back to the. I was there all morning.
Come on.
Yeah. cutting grass, making sure the place was neat and tidy for everybody coming in. Yeah.
It's springtime now, Peter.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, we will talk to you next week. Right.